You know, this is, excuse me, a damn fine cup of coffee.
I don't need you to tell me how good my coffee is, okay?
Hello and welcome to A Damn Fine Cup of Culture. Today we have Matt. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
And we have a very special guest star, Alan. Welcome.
Hello, and thanks for the invite.
And we will be discussing that massively popular franchise, sci-fi franchise, Alien. There will be spoilers, listeners. I think you've all already seen them, but just in case you haven't, watch them first and then come back to us. So, Alan, welcome. Tell us something about yourself and tell us how you got into this franchise that you brought to us today for the podcast.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge film fan and science fiction fan going back to childhood. And I think the Alien films were always something that was, you saw pictures of, you read about, you know, for a kid, they had this slight illusion of danger and excitement, even though it was in the UK at the time, it was an X-rated film. It was 18s and over only. And so it eventually came round to being shown on British television. And my parents, being responsible parents, banned us from watching it. We weren't allowed to stay up to watch it, even though me and my brother had versions in our head that were so exciting. So we had to sneak down to watch it after the parents had gone to bed and had the TV on to watch Alien with the volume at the lowest possible setting we could get away with it to try and not wake anyone up. And a truly thrilling and exciting experience that I think the illicitness helped, but it absolutely blew my mind. Even though this watching had commercial breaks. So the whole atmosphere, you occasionally had these pauses and you were thrown back into sort of a safe, recognizable consumer world. I don't think I would have got through it without those. I was young enough that it was great to be terrified, but you just need these little timeouts to get through the film. But it didn't disappoint then, and I've sort of loved the Alien. I've been loving the Alien ever since.
So basically, you would have been watching a sci-fi horror movie by Ridley Scott, and then there would be an ad break with ads by Ridley Scott for Hovis bread, right?
Yes, definitely. That would have been the setup. But thankfully, his adverts didn't tend to be as terrifying.
All right, so that takes us to Alien 1, which is probably the most significant film in the franchise. Well, the plot should be clear. It's basically a horror plot. Dan O'Bannon, who wrote it, said he wanted to make Texas Chainsaw Massacre in space. Ridley Scott, who directed it, says it's a sort of Rosemary's Baby kind of thing. They wanted a straightforward thriller. Star Wars had already been out. That came out in 77. So the concept of the used universe sort of started around then. And in Alien 1, it's very sort of obvious. You get this, the first shots are this tour around the Nostromo. So this beautiful spaceship, and you see the coffee pot, and you see the bobbleheads, and you see that people were there. And then, of course, you see them all waking up. They go to an alien planet. They pick up a facehugger monster type animal, and then it tries to kill all of them and nearly succeeds. The only one left standing is our final girl, and my favorite final girl, Ripley. And the final girl is a horror movie trope. It's basically just Halloween 1, where the last person standing is this ordinary woman who has no special superpowers, just an ordinary human being. And she then ends up killing the big bad monster, or in this case, sings "You Are My Lucky Star" and kills the alien. Interesting, I think, is that in this future, we haven't learned absolutely nothing as humanity. This is sort of the anti-Star Trek. You don't get any idealism. There is classism there. They very quickly start talking about how their shares are less than the other guy's shares. There's hierarchy. Ripley is not taken seriously at all as an officer, so there's a little bit of sexism there too. So this is a sort of universe where it's just as terrible as it is here, possibly worse, because there's also a monster trying to kill everyone. Interestingly, I think with the first Alien film, the alien itself, so the monster, is described as the perfect being. It's indestructible. And we will find out later, we'll get to that later, in the franchise, that they sort of kind of cheat a little bit on that one. It's not as unkillable as the first Alien movie makes it seem. So that is the first Alien. I think I will keep this brief because we all are so very familiar with that film. And I will give the microphone to Alan to talk about Aliens and how it succeeds and how it fails. Go ahead.
Yes, no, thanks. I mean, I think all of us are huge fans of Alien, and I think it is one of my favorite films. And I think one of the really exciting things about Aliens is that it manages to be the sequel that is effectively an equal of the film it follows. And I think it does do that by not being the usual horror sequel. So it takes a great horror film, but in making it a sequel, it doesn't just replay the story. It takes another look at the concepts and then says, how can we tell almost a different kind of story with some of the concepts that have been taken from the first film? And I think that that's such a sort of innovative way of approaching making a sequel, and especially a sequel to a horror film, because more often than not, the horror film is the slasher will come back and he'll kill another batch of virgins are going to get slayed at summer camp. And rather than someone saying, okay, well, there is this killer, let's maybe have a film about people hunting the killer or shift the narrative. They never do. They always think, well, we've had a hit, let's just do that again. And what I always think is amazing about Aliens is that they said, well, no, we're not going to tell a story of a creepy alien stalking a spaceship again. We're going to take the concept of the alien and almost put it in a very different story. And another really brave thing it does, which is quite surprising given that you'd assume that maybe they wouldn't, is one of the concepts that they take into Aliens and is so important to Aliens is that they carry over Ripley. And they give her a story that isn't the same story again. She doesn't go back to the spaceship and have the same encounter. It follows on from the first film. She has a narrative in the second film. And it's incredibly important that she's there. The film is based more around her almost than around the horror monster that is selling the film. Which I think is another sort of brilliant aspect of the film. I rewatched it for this, and one of the things that really struck me was the first third is all Ripley, and it's all Ripley having a story. It's her story of almost being put in new, uncomfortable situations. She's having to deal with a corporation. She's having to deal with suddenly finding herself in an army unit, and all the story is her uncomfortable with the nature with this, and her learning from this, and so. I think it's great, even though most people coming to this film, they know about the alien, they're waiting for the alien. And it's going, yeah, but we're not going to do that for a while. You're going to watch this for a bit, and you're going to get engrossed by this for a bit. And I think, this follows on because I think one of the things famous about the first film is that Ripley in the original script wasn't necessarily a woman. So it was very much a sort of feminist statement made in the casting. Whereas this is obviously, they know the character, they're going to now write for the character, which again changes is a different angle coming from it, which gives her more of a story, but also in a weird way is slightly regrettable that her story then has to fit into a journey of finding a family and the awakening of her maternal instincts. you wouldn't have written this film and then cast one of the characters sort of gender blind. You would not have had this story. It comes from centering on Ripley, but I think James Cameron is a slightly conservative director, and so and so his instincts of saying, well, I'm going to tell a story based around a hard woman, but ultimately what she wants is a family. And also, definitely, I like the idea that they're not learning anything. They've not learned anything from our time. Which again, rewatching Aliens includes the idea that smoking is bad for you. Everyone is still smoking. We haven't kicked that habit. That's still part of the universe, even this far in the future. But I think rewatching it, I sort of love it. I love its expansion of the universe in so many ways. But I think one thing I will always say about Aliens, which I think is such a shame, having come off Alien, is that it does turn the alien into basically a bug. It does tell us what the alien is. It's effectively an insect. It's got a queen that's laying eggs. These are all creatures, almost a hive, They become out-and-out monsters, whereas before, you were never quite sure how much intelligence you were dealing with. And I think it's such a shame that they do that to the character, because if you watch Alien, they're such an unknown. They're such a sort of almost H.P. Lovecraft Call of Cthulhu creature from the void that cannot be stopped. And then Aliens is like, nah, they're basically souped-up ants. And I think that's a real shame that, you know, my sort of feeling is that it then just knocks the franchise, or maybe not so much knocks it off course, but it sets it on rails that sort of limits it going forward. And speaking of going forward, I think we then get on to the third film. And I think Matt is quite an advocate for that film.
Yeah, I am that kind of guy who corners you at a party and tells you that actually Alien 3 is a really good film, and it's totally unfairly decried as, you know, ruining the franchise. I also rewatched the first three films, and we are going to be focusing on the first three films in this podcast. And I have to say that, you know, I absolutely agree with what you've said about the first and second film, but I was looking forward to rewatching Alien 3, and I still really like it. I think it changes things up. I do think there are diminishing returns, especially with respect to the alien itself. But I do think that, you know, aesthetically, tonally, this film does some very worthwhile things. I mean, for one thing, even though I do think it goes back to the first film, to Alien, by just having one creature picking off characters one by one, it still feels very different, and it develops Ripley in a very different way. So in the first film, we had Ripley as a normal person, as the last girl. In the second film, we had Ripley as a kind of conservatist feminist action icon. In the third film, Ripley is this much more, I would say, fatalistic character. Some people said that the film is nihilistic because it doesn't just press a reset button on the end of Aliens, it kind of squishes most of the remaining characters mercilessly. And I understand why people might react to that negatively, but I think it's necessary for the film to work, because this is a Ripley who has lost everything. This is a Ripley who realizes that she herself is not the unstoppable power mama of aliens. And I think for that, she needs to be alone and to tentatively make kind of new alliances. And I think those alliances I find quite fascinating, more so in the assembly cut, which develops the characters more. She's stranded on a planet, Fury 161, where all of the people there are basically former prisoners. They are all these kind of bald, shaved heads, former murderers, well, former, ideally, former murderers, rapists. And she's completely on her own. And she has to still find a way to function in that environment, which I think is really fascinating. Also, I love the cast. I have to say that rewatching Aliens, I'm a bit tired of the Space Marines because they are all very cartoony characters. It works for the film, but I actually quite like what Alien 3 in the extended version does with these characters. They all look pretty much the same. They're these bald, hulky thugs, you think. But then several of them actually developed in kind of neat little subtle ways, which I really like. The music is totally different. I mean, if you look at Alien, which has Jerry Goldsmith's wonderful ominous orchestral soundtrack, and then Aliens, which is James Horner pounding action orchestral soundtrack, Elliot Goldenthal, who wrote the music for Alien 3, his music, there's something more, well, alien about it, something more metaphysical, which I think very much fits this plot. I like the nice irony in Alien 3, basically Ripley can't kill the alien. There's no weapons. She will try to kill it, and obviously in the end the alien is defeated, but for most of it she cannot kill the alien, and the alien, interestingly enough, cannot kill Ripley, because Ripley carries offspring. So there's this thing where they can't kill each other, yet they manage to kill each other in the end. So it's almost like there's a meta commentary on the franchise here. You know, you can't kill Ripley, you can't kill the alien, because they have to keep coming back in sequels. Yet Fincher finds a way of killing them both off at the end. Not that it killed the franchise, but he tried. So I think tonally, in terms of atmosphere, in terms of mood, and I very much respond to mood in films, I really like the film. I like it more at this point than Aliens, even though I think Aliens is the better film, the less flawed film. Perhaps the main flaw of Alien 3 for me is the very uneven effects work. It's a David Fincher film, therefore aesthetically it's fascinating, but the effects, many of them are not exactly very good. You see them as special effects, and I think that, with me at least, takes me out of the film at times. The alien itself is, when it's in close-ups, it's done well, but the moment it kind of scuttles along the corridors, it looks phony, and that doesn't help. But I'd really be interested in talking to you about, you know, I know that I'm the one who defends Alien 3. I think the two of you are more ambivalent, or possibly not ambivalent at all, about the film. I would be interested in your opinion about why would you consider this film perhaps failed? So I'm hoping that we'll get around to that as we discuss the three films.
It's so interesting that starting with Aliens, the franchise goes into this motherhood fetish, really sort of strongly, where Ripley in the third one is actually pregnant with the alien. And in the second one, she is a sort of mum to, you know, the girl character. So I think, Adam, what you say is interesting, is that in the first Alien, and that's what I love about it so much, she is just an ordinary person. And then in the second and the third, she becomes this, I don't know, stand-in for, in the third, almost Joan of Arc-like, with the bald head and the beautiful cheekbones, a sort of stand-in for a very specific sort of womanhood or motherhood in space. And that keeps annoying me because, as I said in the very beginning, Ripley is my favorite final girl. You don't get to mess with Ripley. So I get really, really annoyed at the end of Alien 2, so Aliens, when she suddenly dons this mecha power suit.
Yes.
And fights the alien. And I'm like, dude, you can't do that to Ripley. The whole point of Ripley is that she's not superhuman. And again, in the third, she's almost a martyr. I think Cameron also has this idea of almost messianic tones, right? So that's what one of the things that sort of annoys me a little bit.
I always like, when it comes to Alien, something I remember reading, that at the time, the only person in the cast who was famous was Tom Skerritt, who plays the captain. And so even in terms of publicity, and at the time it was coming out, this was the Tom Skerritt film. And so audiences at the time would have started watching a film where he's one of the good guys in terms of the crew of the ship. He seems quite reasonable. He's trying to do his best. He is the obvious hero in a conventional science fiction film. And I love the fact that for audiences at this time would have been primed to see him in that way. And then about two-thirds of the way through the film, he's killed. And you're suddenly left with the remaining unknowns, basically, going like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? And I love, there's almost an element of, I suppose you could almost call it a sort of pulp quality, that there's something accidental in this, that it's doing stuff that is almost for the thrill of it, that has amazingly stood the test of time. When they start overthinking Alien, when they start thinking like the franchise, we can give a message, or we can make changes and show a different science fiction environment, I think sometimes it overdoes that. Mm-hmm. And I think David Fincher is probably someone who is guilty of that at times. So he will overthink things, and I just find it becomes less interesting, because ultimately there's not enough in the Alien for a really serious piece of work. But there's a hell of a lot to make a very entertaining or scary or exciting piece of work. And one of the problems with Alien, Alien 3, is it's taking itself too seriously.
Yeah.
I have to say, I mean, I see your point, but at the same time, I think one of the things I like about the franchise is, I think more than any other franchise in any genre I can think of, we get very different entries. I mean, you've got Alien, which is the perfect consummate space horror movie. You've got Aliens, which is the perfect space horror action movie. You've got Alien 3, which Matt says is the perfect movie about prisoners in space being picked off by an alien. And you've got Alien Resurrection, which is basically a French comic with all of the silliness and surreality that comes with it. I like that basically each film does a very different thing. Each film stylistically, in terms of the story it tells, is its own beast. But at the same time, I do also have to say that if I had to choose any alien, you know, if we choose just one alien film to survive and all the others are consigned to mulch and lead, it's obviously going to be Alien, the first film that's going to survive. It has to, because it is the most perfect organism of these films, I would say. And yeah, I also do very much love that. If you look at Alien, it's an ensemble movie, much, much more than the other films. The other films are Ripley and some other people. But Alien is an ensemble movie almost to the extent where, I mean, some of the scenes where they're just, you know, kind of having breakfast and talking, it's almost like, you know, Altman in space. And that's wonderful. That's great. It's, of course, if you only start watching the films when you're, you know, a teenager in the 80s, you know that Sigourney Weaver, she's the star. She's going to be the main character. In a way, what you just said, Alan, it's something that we can know, but we cannot experience. And that's a bit of a shame. But it's there. If you watch Alien, you never get the impression that obviously it's going to be Ripley who survives, because all of them at times are smart. All of them at times are stupid. All of them at times are unlikable or likable. So anyone could survive. And even when I rewatch it, I know what's going to happen, but I still get that feeling of anyone could die, anyone could survive. And that is wonderful. That's definitely not there in the other films.
What is interesting to me nowadays, I mean, we've all watched a lot of horror movies, is how affecting it still is, exactly what you say, Matt. Because it's such an ensemble cast, and because they're just having breakfast together, the point where this Kane's chest bursts open and the monster goes, it's just still shocking, isn't it? I mean, after 41 years, it's still a shocking scene. And I think it's almost inevitable with Aliens and Alien 3. We know who Ripley is. We know there's an alien that's going to kill everybody. We know what it does. We know what a facehugger is. It's almost inevitable that you're going to look at it and go like, yes, but. So they have to come up with something new and something special also plot-wise. I mean, it's forgivable. It's just that it becomes such a female thing, you know, with the mother alien mirroring the Mama Ripley stuff. And Alien 3, I rewatched it for this, and I was kind of stunned by how beautiful it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember it because I was annoyed that two main characters from Aliens were killed off right at the outset. You're like, we just went through this entire traumatic experience with these two characters. They survive. And then the beginning of the next film, he kills them off immediately. And then you get this sort of very strange, almost bathhouse sets with all the guys with beautiful, beautiful weathered faces. And it's really, really gorgeous to see. Even if I don't agree with the plot, and I just, all the religion, just at some point, like I said, Joan of Arc, it gets up my nose a little bit. But it is very beautiful to see. It's still worth watching, even if it's not the best one in the franchise, I think.
I mean, it does make me wish that David Fincher had been allowed to make just a science fiction film. And almost he hadn't come on board the Aliens franchise, but said, make a beautiful science fiction film. Because I think it's almost the alien elements that are detracting from the good stuff in the film. And I think where I feel watching it, that I feel is the problem, is that it's when it feels like what makes an alien film has been set in stone. Like, as we mentioned, that, you know, there's the alien that's going to be killing people, and there's going to be Ripley fighting the alien. And that is such a sort of limiting format. And you can get incredibly talented people in who will make something visual, who will make the people that are all going to be massacred an interesting looking bunch of people. But ultimately, you are kind of stuck on these quite narrow rails. And I miss someone coming in and doing what Cameron did to Alien, who, you know, maybe Ripley should have been one of the people killed at the very opening. And it was one of the others that survived to be in the third film. To take that sort of step back, because what we see of the film and what we assume of the whole franchise, it's almost the third that creates that creates the idea that the franchise has to have a set of people being killed and Ripley in another, and all this takes place in a new change of the landscape. We're going to make another alien place for this to happen. Rather than thinking, is there a completely different story we can tell? And I do think the fact that we've now been told they're bugs narrows down a level that they could have gone into what is the alien, or how can we maybe never understand the alien? That people desperately trying to understand it who discover that it's not possible. This is all sort of angles that could have gone, but the tanker has almost now been steered in one direction, and that's now going to be it for the rest of the franchise. And I find that quite disappointing, even though I think you can say with both Alien 3 and the fourth film, you get the right people in to make a beautiful science fiction film and to make the people, to make the setup look interesting. They're not like resting on their laurels and just getting someone to say, like, do Aliens again. But it's still that, it's just that little bit too limited. And we're now rehashing the horror idea that we think is the source of the success. And we're now going to be replaying that for an audience that has basically come along to see that and are expecting these moments. And I think that's a shame.
I do think Alien 3 tries to put an end to this. It's just the writers and Fincher didn't count on, you know, you can kill off a character and bring them back the next time round because space magic and magic cloning. I do think in a way, because of Aliens, more, you know, if you just had Alien totally stands on its own. Aliens kind of demands, to some extent, a continuation. And I think because we get a story of Ripley, we get Ripley developing, changing. And I think, for me, Alien 3 works quite well as an end point to Ripley's story. She is a changed Ripley from the first one. And I totally understand if someone doesn't respond to the more metaphysical overtones. I'm not sure they are fully successful. But I have to say, as an endpoint to Ripley's story, Alien 3 works quite well for me. I said before that I think there are diminishing returns in Alien 3, and I think that the alien is one of the weak points. At the same time, I do think, rewatching the film again, you know, as you said, aliens, the aliens are bugs. They're kind of blown down by machine guns. They blow up, spraying acid everywhere. In Alien 3, it's again more like, I think of Jaws in a way, or I think of there's films where you've got, you know, kind of one old graying lion stalking the hunters, that kind of thing. It is an animal, but it is, I think for me, it's an animal that feels totally different from the animals, plural, in Aliens. In Aliens, they're cannon fodder. And it's fun cannon fodder. I mean, there's this wonderful scene where the automatic guns just keep blasting them to bits and they keep coming. It works for that film. But even aesthetically, I keep coming back to the alien in the first film. The alien in the first film has a beauty, which it never again has in the series. It has this disconcerting beauty. It still feels like a creature to me, possibly a smart creature. But of course, there's the Giga thing. And I think it's possibly one of Giga's best works, the creation, the design of the alien. And it's perfectly done, except for one scene. There's one scene where the alien in the first film looks silly. That's when it kills Dallas. And that just feels like such a silly horror film moment. It's like basically it goes, bah! And that never works for me.
Well, but the third alien is not actually the end of Ripley's story, because we still have the fourth alien. And if I said that before that Alien 3 is possibly not my favorite, I think Alien 4 is even less of my favorite for exactly the same reasons that I've talked about before. You cannot give Ripley superpowers. If you do that, then you kill the entire story. The whole thing, Space Marines or whoever, is that these need to be pretty ordinary people for the whole thing to work. To give Ripley super acid mummy powers, then it's just stops working. And I mean, if you look at these three films in the sort of context of what the rest of what they did with it, I mean, they should have ended it at Alien 3. I absolutely agree with you, Matt, there. They killed off the alien. They killed off Ripley. They can't now reclone her 200 years later and have Winona Ryder as a robot. You know, you can't get away with this. So if you put the first three films in context, what do you think that they get up to within the rest of the franchise and the spin-offs and all that sort of stuff?
I mean, I think personally that, again, not wanting to be too down on the alien, but I think when it sort of shifts from the earlier films, and then especially now in the wider franchise, it shifts from being something that seems, this is a weird way of putting it, it seems a very credible terror, to just a fantasy creature. One of the beauties about Alien is how real it seems. That how, once you buy into the notion that there is this creature that is capable of this terrible stuff, all the humans behave very human. And, you know, the world they live in is so recognizably our world that then suddenly has to face this horrible thing. I think Alien does that brilliantly. I think Aliens, especially the first half still manages that. You still have this, it's a very real response to think, we think there's something terrible there, let's send a whole set of soldiers to go deal with it, and they will be hideously ill-prepared. It still seems, in this sort of credible world, that what is happening would be how humans would react in this situation. And I think, as especially towards the end, as I think Cameron wants to give himself the sort of action movie ending, the sort of happy ending, and the fighters will triumph because they're fighters for good, it kills that idea. I think that there's a moment in Aliens which I always find disappointing, which is when Newt is taken. So when the small girl is taken, and everything that Alien teaches me is that child should be dead within 4 seconds. There's no way if an alien takes a child that child will die, and it will be already sort of glooped up somewhere in a state that it can never recover from. Still alive, but in a horrible way. And instead, that becomes the impetus for a very Hollywood rescue mission. And I think at that point, you're taking the franchise into, okay, we're the world of fantasy adventure. And actually, I think the alien as a creature is not a very interesting creature for that world. If you're going to tell sort of fantasy stories of aliens, then you need more. You want more. You've suddenly just got this thing that looks beautiful and that kills in sort of horrible ways. But that's it. And the franchise is always trying to make that interesting in a way that I never think it quite can.
Mm-hmm. No, and also they cheat quite badly. We have a running joke at my house. We watched all the Alien films together and we just kept yelling at the screen, acid. Because in the first Alien, the facehugger and the alien itself has this super acid that burns through everything. And for instance, in the second Alien film, they shoot at it with these massive guns and there's goop splashing everywhere and nobody gets burned. And then I think it's after that then there's a drop of acid and somebody does get burned, and then they don't get burned, and then they do get burned. So that they are not even like, I think it would have worked, Alan, if the alien had remained this super being, this unkillable super being that is mostly in the shadows, but they can't break their own rules, right? In the you can kill it sort of way. I know how you feel about
it. I have to say, I never took that quite as literally, the you can't kill it. I took it, you can't kill it with what you've got at your disposal. You know, obviously Ian Holm's character, by the way, Ian Holm, let's raise a glass to him because he was a wonderful actor and he was wonderful in Alien. So it's very sad to see him gone. I think when he tells the crew of the Nostromo this thing about, you know, it's unstoppable, you can't kill it, part of that is also him being the bastard that he is. This whole thing at the end, you know, you have my sympathy. He's trolling them. So that's why I never took it quite as literally. I think they don't have equipment. They've got flamethrowers that they cobble together, probably from a couple of boxes of breakfast muesli. They've got a couple of plastic knives and that's it. Obviously, you can't kill the alien, but obviously, they've got you can't put it any other way, big fucking guns. You can blow it to smithereens. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I do think they kind of play it rather loose in Aliens with the acid, but you do see someone's face kind of get burnt off. So at least there's that. I agree with Alan totally that what I definitely don't like is how hung up the franchise gets on lore. You know, where does the alien come from? Who creates it? What does an alien look like if it's born from an ox or from a human being or from a dog or from a rabbit or from a chicken? What does the alien look like if it's born from a predator, for heaven's sake? I mean, none of that lore interests me. That's very much what kind of teenage boys into RPG rule books and comic books are into, but it doesn't make for interesting storytelling. In some ways, I would actually say that there's more potential for interesting storytelling in the new films. What is it? Prometheus and Alien Covenant, except they're screwed up by bad writing. And there, the alien definitely doesn't help. Take out the alien and you've got a story about basically mankind's creation deciding that they don't like their creators, so they're going to screw with them. There's a story in that, and it's well acted, but don't bring in the alien, don't bring in the prequel stuff, because it does not add anything. Don't bring in new aliens that then, you know, someone's going to write a 5,000-word wiki entry on it. That's just not interesting storytelling. That's nerd wanking, I'm sorry to say.
It becomes sort of fanfic, doesn't it?
It does, totally.
It's sort of filmmakers' fanfic.
And I mean, talking about the writing, I think even though I see things to like in Resurrection as well as Prometheus and Covenant, I think Resurrection's big problem for me is you've got an extremely inventive, visually inventive director. I can't remember, was it Journey and Caro, or was it just Journey?
I think it's he's got the credit, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think Caro possibly worked with him. And when he does his own thing, it's fun, it's inventive. It's perhaps not a good Alien film, but there's something original here. But then you've got Joss Whedon, who wrote the script, and Joss Whedon's verbal humor, and a French director whose English is probably not that great, who's mainly a visual director. These two things don't go together. You mush them together, but it's two things that don't go together. It's like chocolate and orange, you know, to offend all the Jaffa cake eaters out there.
Yeah, but the cast, it's such a missed opportunity as well, because the cast, oh my goodness, I could just watch the starting credits for all these films and be satisfied, because these people are so enormously, enormously talented. I mean, even with Prometheus, I think you could call it, Guy Pearce, we've got Michael Fassbender. I mean, everyone's in it, right? And you can't sort of, I don't know, cobble together something that's mildly memorable. It just weirds me out.
Talking about cast, I can't let this podcast get totally, you know, move towards its end without giving a shout out to Charles Dance in Alien 3. I think most people these days know Charles Dance as the kind of patrician baddie in Game of Thrones, but I love what he does in Alien 3. For one thing, he's buff, which you don't expect Charles Dance to be, and he's young. And he's nice, and there's these wonderful scenes which are not about the alien at all, but just about the characters with him and Ripley. I love those scenes.
I think what I find quite interesting about the casting in Alien 3 is I think it's got so many stalwarts of British telly that when I first saw it, it doesn't feel so much as a group of unknowns. It's so many people that you can recognize from a drama that was on ITV like two nights before you saw the film.
Exactly.
So it has this weird, you have a lot of baggage with a lot of the people that you're now seeing shaven headed that come from all their previous performances. And I'm not sure that helps me enjoy it. It feels a bit too much of a roll call of, oh, these are famous people. Whereas you almost wanted it to be, they are all unknowns and they're all going to get killed.
Yeah, but Mike Barrett from Casualty is in it. I mean,
I just keep feeling that everyone wants to be in one Alien film, right? All these massively talented people. And I just keep feeling when I look at the franchise as a whole, that all the agencies, the actor agencies are like screaming, oh, there's a new Alien film. I have got to get my client into this Alien film because it's such a massive brand. Even Alien versus Predator, which is just, I'm sorry if I offend anyone, but it's just dreadful. But even in that, I mean, there's a lot of talent there as well. I think people just, it's just a massive brand and people are just attracted to it. And in Alien 3, the faces, I mean, these guys are just so glorious in the way they do things. They go completely overboard. They go completely nuts and berserk. And it's just, you know, it's just wonderful to watch, I think.
But I think that comes, and it's certainly something I sort of felt rewatching Prometheus, is there probably is quite an A-list that want to be in one of these films. And you've got these characters that they exist to be killed. That's their sort of purpose in the film. And actors being actors, you get the impression that they thought, well, I've got limited time before I'm going to get eaten. So I want to make myself as quirky as possible. So you had Idris Elba, who goes, well, funnily enough, I've got this accordion. And then we've got to, and then another one turns around, look at my haircut. This is like a crazy sci-fi haircut. And they've all got these sort of almost quirks. And it feels a little bit like a desperation to make it more interesting. Mm. Or, you know, the producers and directors have gone, yeah, look, you're basically here to get killed, but you're A-list. So whatever you want to do, you do. And they go a bit sort of crazy with it, which there's a fun element to it, but it's not going to make it terrifying. It's not going to make it scary.
Yeah, I think Alien Resurrection definitely has that. And I think Alien Resurrection embraces that silliness. I mean, it's basically we get to the 60s TV Batman series period of Alien. And you don't come back from that after that kind of silliness, trying to get all po-faced and serious as Ridley Scott tried to do in the prequels. It doesn't work because we've already seen the alien do the bat dance, basically.
Yeah. That's such a good analogy, the sort of Batman 60s TV series. because I rewatched Alien Resurrection recently, and like there's moments where the alien is roaring, which just seemed so dreadful. So like, you know, the horrible creature roar. And another thing I noticed, which I felt was a real transformation to something cartoony, is the aspect of the evil corporation. In Alien, there's a scene where you have the realization that the orders have come through from the corporation to Ian Holm's android that basically says, right, actually, what we want you to do is we want you to keep the alien alive, crew expendable. And it is played in Alien as a proper horror moment when you realize the extent to which these sort of characters are doomed, that they're going to be assailed from all fronts. It is a horrible moment, and it really has a reality to it about how terrible corporations can be. And I think even Aliens still manages to have an element of that, that it's slightly more cartoony, that the evil of the corporation seems real. Their motives seem... you have the brilliant Carter Burke, who's kind of the, in Aliens, who is the guy from the company, who turns out to be the most evil person imaginable, with this sort of charming 80s look to him. And I still can't see anyone wearing a suit that has their collar sort of turned up without thinking they're evil after Carter Burke from Aliens. It is the fashion choice of evil people. But it still adds to the danger, the fact that this is now something that you will struggle with. But by Alien Resurrection, it's almost part of the pantomime fun that you're going to have a boo, hissable company, and you know the company person will turn up. And yeah, the audience, you're expected to go boo, and then all the aliens behind you. There is no terror or threat there anymore. It's part of a formula that businesses are bad guys in a very cartoony way.
It also becomes weirdly more realistic. I think the Christmas Panther thing kind of works well with that. You're going to punish the bad guys by having them being eaten by the alien. They're going to get the worst deaths because they deserve the deaths. You're going to get the, oh no, he shouldn't have died deaths, and the, finally he gets what he's got coming deaths. And I think the moment you get that kind of black and white infantile moralism, it can be fun in a panto way, but yeah, you don't come back from panto.
Yeah, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. I think after the fourth Alien film, you just can't go. You can make spin-offs until, you know, your head hurts, but you can't come back from that. That is just so, so silly. It really is so silly. Because I think Ripley is the sort of 100th clone, and even the sort of scene where she discovers all the previous clones, which have gone horribly wrong, is just not affecting at all. Because you can't go back after all that silliness and then have this really affecting sort of emotional scene. It just doesn't, just tonally, just doesn't work for me at all.
And I think there's something interesting that maybe follows on from that, is if you read about, you know, the attempts that are still being made to make more Alien films, that the idea that keeps refloating nowadays is the idea of a story that follows on from Aliens, that you almost go back and you pretend that Alien 3, Alien Resurrection never happened. And you almost start with the three characters that survived Aliens being woken up in some possible new alien scenario. Because I think they know that once that genie is gone, the best way to do it is just pretend it never happened. That we'll go back to when we were still trying to make it serious, and we'll almost reboot from this point onwards. And I can see, strangely, I can see why that would have such appeal. And why that idea, I think I've seen there's been two treatments based on that idea that in the last few years have been sort of going round as this is how Fox and now Disney are thinking of bringing it back, is this a new Alien 3?
Alien Begins. That would be awesome.
I cannot imagine a Disney Alien, or perhaps I can, and that's even worse.
It will start singing.
Will it be added to the lineup of princesses?
Well, I suppose if one's the queen and the princess is the facehugger, that's the small child. So we'll have a story of the misunderstood facehugger whose mother is a bit too strict,
exactly,
and doesn't allow them to enjoy music. And that's the story of the film.
You've got Tangled, you've got Frozen, and you've got Chest Burst.
Yes, that's true.
All right. So I was wondering, guys, now that we're slowly getting out of the madness that we've been in for the last couple of months, Are there things, films, theatre, books, something being released that you're looking, sort of massively looking forward to?
I mean, I almost feel, and I'm speaking as someone in the UK, when we don't have a date when cinemas are going to open up again, I'm almost trying to avoid thinking too much about what might be coming up. I mean, definitely I have in my head there's the new Dune that's due to come out in December. And I'm so hoping that there'll be an element of normality here by Christmas, because that is definitely a science fiction film I will want to watch on the big screen. I am very much looking forward to that. But anything that might be coming out before that, I am kind of sort of, don't think about it too much, because you'll get excited and then it won't happen.
They will take it away from you.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm one of those weird people who love the old Dune, the one with Sting in it. Everybody hates that movie. I adore that movie. I've seen it, I think, 20 times. So I'm so looking forward to what they're going to come up with in that universe. It's a very complicated universe. It's a very interesting universe. It's a very ugly and mean and nasty universe. So I'm really, really looking forward to what they do with Dune.
I always feel that I'm not a huge fan of David Lynch's Dune. And I think one of the reasons is it has possibly the greatest opening of a science fiction film. And every time I start watching it, this sort of very sort of ethereal space cosmic sort of narration and music, I always start watching it and think, this is my kind of film. This is brilliant. And then you're in the Emperor's throne room with these weird aliens and this amazing design, and I think this is going to be the best film ever. And then the rest of the film happens, and it kind of, I'm not, you know, it doesn't sustain that level at all in my view. And I'm kind of maybe naively hoping that the new film that's going to come out is going to be a lot more of that opening 5-10 minutes, but now for a full film. They'll get it right this time, and I'll enjoy the whole thing.
Well, just to loop back quickly into the Alien franchise, it should basically have been Jodorowsky who managed to finish Dune. And I think it was Dan O'Bannon who actually went to the filming and met so many people. And Jodorowsky, in his own way, and all these Mobius and all these people, were an incredibly big influence on Alien and the entire franchise. So it would have been like one of my things, Jodorowsky's Dune, you know, when I'm in heaven, I get to finally watch Jodorowsky's Dune.
I was going to say, I once was helping out an art centre in a town called Plymouth in the UK, and there was a touring exhibition of the art for Jodorowsky's Dune that came. So it was a lot of the work that Giga and Mobius had done, sort of artwork. And then we programmed a day of three films to go with this exhibition. And it was David Lynch's Dune, followed by Jodorowsky's Holy Mountain, finishing off with an original print of Alien that was sort of scratchy and dark, and it actually sort of added to the experience that, like, you know, you couldn't quite see what was going on, just made it all the more terrifying. Cool. But I always quite like that, because you do see how much that sort of Jodorowsky's Dune was this huge influence, I think, especially the artists he got in, what they drew that couldn't be used there. I think you see its influence in Star Wars, you see its influence almost across science fiction into sort of the 80s. And yeah, I think Alien benefits so much from
that. Oh yeah. Matt, do you have anything that you're massively looking forward to, it, or are you just joining the Dune cheerleaders?
I have to say that in terms of new films, there's nothing that I'm currently excited about. I mean, of course, I will be going to see Black Widow when it comes out. I will be going to see the new Bond when that one comes out. Dune as well. Tenet. But I'm not excited about any of them. Actually, at the moment, what I'm looking forward to is just being able to go to the cinema, because we're lucky here in Switzerland. And also, you know, there's some open-air cinemas that show old classics. My favorite cinema is doing an open-air cinema. They'll be showing stuff like Bonjour Tristesse and what is it, To Catch a Thief? That's what I'm really looking forward to, you know, having some social distancing, having a nice glass of wine or something in my hand, and watching a classic. That's what I'm actually looking forward to most.
Awesome. All right. That was our take on the Alien franchise from A Damn Fine Cup of Culture. We hope to see you next time. Thank you so much, Alan, for joining us.
No, it's been, I've really enjoyed it. And thank you again for the invite.
And Matt.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.